you can self-affect label and get the same effect. You'll calm yourself down in literally 90 seconds. Then you can do your own problem solving. All right, what am I trying to achieve? What's my problem? Mm-hmm. What are the things that I've tried so far that have worked? What have I thought about but I haven't tried? You know, what information am I missing? Do I need to get more information? Do I need to get more stuff? And, you know, what happens if I'm wrong?
Yeah.
You always ask that question. What if I'm wrong?
Well, welcome to the Coffee Break Podcast, where our mission is to share business ideas, practices, and strategies while we enjoy our cup of coffee. Today's guest is Doug Knoll, and I just want to go ahead and warn you, he's going to blow your mind. I don't want to overpromise and underdeliver, but I'm just going to tell you that he's going to blow your mind today. So be ready for that. But before we get into the conversation with him, I want to invite you to subscribe to our podcast. If you do that on the audio form, if you listen to podcasts as you're driving back and forth to work, on airplanes, running, biking, whatever, hiking, if you like hiking, if you know what hiking is, you want to subscribe to the podcast so that you can always be up to date with the latest episodes. Make sure you do that. You can find all of the places that you can subscribe at lockdoc.net/podcast. We also want to invite you to subscribe to the video portion as well. We produce a video of the podcast every week, and it comes out at the same exact time, every Tuesday morning at 9 a.m., and you can do that on YouTube by searching LOCDOCINC. Just hit the subscribe button. You'll find us there, or you can do it on Facebook, and just search for the same thing, Lock Doc Security, and you'll find us right there, and you can follow our page, and you'll see the latest videos every Tuesday when they come out. The conversation with Doug is eye-opening. We're talking about understanding emotions, understanding how to de-escalate intense situations, peacekeeping, all of those types of things. It's a fun conversation. This guy's really interesting. Grab a cup of coffee and get ready for this conversation.
We got so much to say. We got a podcast to make. We're sipping on lattes and it's time for a coffee break. Time for a coffee break. Oh, yeah.
Doug, thank you for joining us today. Pretty excited about this conversation. We're going to be talking about peacekeeping and mediation, which I feel like as a business owner, as a leader in any type of a business, you get to operate on those skills at some level. And I'm going to say that not all of us are really good at it. So hopefully you've got some good advice and tips for us today. But if you deal with people at any level, I'm sure you've got some great practical advice for us today. So we'll jump into that. But before we do that, it's rapid fire. 5 randomly selected questions just to get under your skin with unknown point values. And then we will give you a score at the end.
Okay.
You ready? All right.
I am.
Question number one. What are some things that you don't understand about the opposite sex?
Not much.
Hmm.
Not much. And I can elaborate on that if you want.
Let's do it.
I have studied human emotion for the past 25 years, the neuroscience of emotion. Mm-hmm. Not the psychology of emotion. And once you begin to understand human emotion, you begin to understand how social conditioning and cultural conditioning causes people to react in various situations. And women and men are both emotional, mm-hmm. but there are cultural rules that drive the display of emotion between men and women. And since men were not well educated in emotional competency, We men look at women and we see them become emotional and it just becomes this confusing, chaotic mess. And oh my God, what do I do?
Mm.
But once you've been trained in emotional competency, you look at a woman who's emotional and you say, she's just being emotional, no big deal. And so it's not confusing at all. And so women are not confusing. My wife is not confusing. Is it? Today's our anniversary. I'm not confused by her at all. Sometimes she gets a little upset.
Mm-hmm.
So she's having a moment of upset. No big deal.
Oh, I love this. This is going to be great. Okay, question number two. What have you recently realized that you've been doing wrong?
What I've been trying to do is teach people these foundational skills, thinking that people are really motivated to learn them. And finally, I've come to the recognition that we live in a microwave society. People are not patient with true learning in the way that I am, and perhaps people my age are, where you learning is a real, real adventure and you really get into it. People want to be spoon-fed stuff. So this is a big mistake I've made in my marketing. And so I'm going to completely change the way that I present my material and make it super fast and super easy and see what happens.
Ooh, that's intriguing. That's deep. And so true, because a lot of people, well, the only way you're going to learn this is if it's you invest the next 10 years. Oh, that's too much. I'm not doing that. I'm not.
Right. Or even the next 3 hours.
Yeah. What you got in 5 minutes? What have you got in 15 seconds? You can tell me.
That's right.
Okay.
And of course, there's nothing of value that you can learn in 15 seconds. So the trick is going to be how good a teacher can I be to distill down these concepts that I teach into, say, 90 minutes or less, and hope that somebody's going to come out with a little bit of mastery. Ooh. And that's on the teacher, not on the student.
Come on now. What obscure, question number three, what obscure interests do you have?
I have a lot of them. I'm a jazz and blues violinist. I'm also a whitewater rafter, a level 3 certified ski instructor. I'm a helicopter and airplane pilot, instrument rated. Used to be a rock climber, but I'm a little old for that now. And I live on 10 acres in the middle of the Central Sierra Nevada, above the fog and below the snow.
How much work was it to get your helicopter license?
After I learned how to hover, it was really easy. Hovering was a little, because I learned how to fly a helicopter after I learned how to fly an airplane. And a helicopter is an airplane once you learn how to hover.
Yeah.
Well, not exactly. You got to learn. The helicopter training is, it took me about 8 or 9 hours to learn how to hover. 5 different controls. You learn one control at a time, and it's eye-to-hand coordination. Mm-hmm. Once you hover, then it's learning how to take off and land, which is basically like flying an airplane. And then the rest of the training is all emergency procedures. What happens if this breaks? What happens if this breaks? And the emergency procedure is a little scary.
Yeah.
Because you kind of drop out of the sky pretty fast.
Yeah, I watched a video about a guy that was working on getting his license, and he was talking about that, where you had to do the auto rotation.
Yeah. Auto rotations, and you do a straight in auto rotation, you do a 180, and then you do a 360. And basically in the helicopter I trained in, which is a Robinson R22, what you see at your feet is where you're going to land. Mm-hmm. But it's not a crash. It's a controlled landing. And if you do it right, you know, nothing's damaged, assuming you can find a small flat area to land in.
Oh, that's great. All right, question number four. What recent thing have you decided that you're completely over and done with?
Oh, my God. Completely over and done with. Mm-hmm. Well, I don't. There's nothing. I mean, I don't suffer fools gladly. Let's just put it that way. So I'm less and less tolerant of idiots, people who don't think.
All right.
And I'm pretty much over. That means social media is out for me.
Yeah.
I'll use social media for advertising, but I have no interest in being on social media. I mean, I'm kind of over and done with that. I haven't owned a television in 40 years, so I was over and done with that 40 years ago. I don't watch television. I don't listen to the radio.
Dude. That is, you haven't owned a television over 40 years.
Right.
That is incredible. Okay. Last question, number five. This is a great rapid fire, by the way. Question number five. What uncommon thing would you like to see become more common?
I'd like people to learn how to listen each other into existence, which is what I teach. I've seen more change in human beings, more peace, ending fights and arguments forever, if people would just learn how to listen each other into existence.
I like
it. If we did that, everything else in the world would change.
Doug, I'm going to give you a score of 1,400. This is incredible rapid fire. Congratulations. So helicopter pilot, haven't had a TV in 40 years. That's an incredible, you should just lead with that. Hi, my name is Doug, and I haven't had a television in 40 years.
Well, I was born with a lot of disabilities, too. I was born nearly blind, crippled, deaf, bad teeth, left-handed. You know, I mean, I didn't exactly.
I love how you add left-handed in there with all of those other things.
Well, in the 1950s, I mean, you know, I couldn't walk until I was 3. And you know, I was born into affluence and privilege, but my parents didn't know how to deal with me. And you go to these camps and have all these coaches, and they didn't have the patience to deal with somebody like me. They're all right-handed, and not only was I left-handed, but I was also couldn't run for crap and, you know, could barely see, and they didn't have the time for me. Hmm. Nobody had any patience for me.
So you've really worked. So how is your eyesight now?
It's good. Great. Oh. I had really thick glasses as a kid. Finally, in the fourth grade, somebody took the time to check my vision and found out what the problem was. They gave me Coke bottle glasses, mm-hmm. another buzzkill for the girls. So my social and emotional life and as a kid was horrible. But then contacts came along. And I started wearing contacts and that helped. And then all of a sudden, our RK surgery came along and that changed everything. I had RK surgery in both eyes and that was like a miracle. Mm. And then about 10 years after that, I had to have LASIK. And that was a miracle. And then four years ago or so, I had cataract, new lenses put in for cataracts. And my vision's incredible.
Huh.
So.
But you're also left-handed.
I'm left-handed. But I play violin right-handed.
Naturally. I mean, who doesn't? Who really doesn't? Okay. So you kind of gone through a lot of these processes. And we were chatting a little bit before recording. You were a trial lawyer.
For a long time, 22 years.
22 years. And then you decided, I'm done with this, and I want to go into mediation and peacemaking.
Well, it was a little more, it was a long journey, but I decided that I wanted to be a problem. I had an opportunity on a river trip to think about how many people I'd really served as a trial lawyer, and I could only come up with 5 clients that I thought I'd really helped after trying hundreds of lawsuits. And I decided I'm not going to do this anymore, but I didn't know what I was going to do. So when I came back after that trip and drove down out of the mountains to my office, I heard serendipitously the one and only public service announcement for a new master's degree in peacemaking and conflict studies. In those days, I did listen to NPR on the radio. I don't anymore. And so it was a new master's degree being offered at Fresno Pacific University. And so I ultimately enrolled and learned how to be a peacemaker.
So hopefully this isn't detrimental to the fact that we are recording a podcast that we obviously release on social media and all these other things. But here's the takeaway so far into the first 10 minutes of this conversation. If you don't watch TV and listen to the radio, you can accomplish a lot of great things because you have a lot of time to educate yourself and accomplish bigger feats than you could probably imagine. But you got to imagine the amount of time, energy, and resources that you've put into the things that you were talking about that you've accomplished. A lot of us saturate our time with sitting in front of a television, and we could accomplish the same exact things, but we've dedicated our time or prioritized our time to those things.
Exactly correct. That's a perfect insight. I don't watch television or listen to the radio because I want to accomplish far more many things. And I've done more things in my life than most people accomplish in 3 lifetimes.
Yeah.
Simply because I don't waste time on television, social media, or radio.
I'm not as strict about it as I once was, but years ago, and I want to say probably close to 15 years ago, I kind of woke up one morning and was like, I spend way too much time in the evenings sitting in front of this television. Cable, you're just constantly changing the channel. I know you don't have TV, so there's this thing called cable that they feed a bunch of channels into your television.
I think I know what cable is.
You just constantly changing channels, and I was like, what is life? Like, I'm wasting all of this time. 2 hours a night I'm sitting here, and what could I be accomplishing? And we just literally cut the TV off, turned off the cable. And we didn't have cable television for several years. And we lived a healthier life because we were exercising. When I came home from work in the evening, I was able to put my time towards hobbies and side hustles. Was able to exercise, walk, run, do all those types of things. It changed a lot of things in life. Now, I'm not as dedicated to that as I once was. And I often think about it. I wake up oftentimes in the weekend and go, we're wasting way too much time in front of this thing. Like, just get rid of it. But then I sit there and watch a show. But anyways, so yes, I just totally agree. That's a very interesting concept, how much you could grow yourself personally, personal development, if you just eliminate some of those distractions that aren't really adding value to your life.
Or think about this. So typically on a given, usual day, I'll usually quit doing work. It's really not work. I quit doing some fun stuff and pick up my violin and I'll practice and play for an hour. And then at six, usually that's about when my wife's done with her stuff. We both work from home. Mm-hmm. And imagine spending the next 3 hours together my wife and I spend 3 hours together and we have cocktails and sit and talk. And sometimes we'll be tired and read books in silence, but most of the time we just talk for a couple of hours.
Yeah. There's a wealth of knowledge in this house. I just want to hang out with you for a couple of days because there's so much knowledge. How many books have you read?
Tens of thousands. Easily.
We understand the frustrations HOA board members and property managers face when deciding the best solution for their HOA and pool security. Should we use a keypad, hand out keys, or install a key card system? Do we even need cameras? These are some of the questions that are difficult to navigate, and we're here to help. At LockDock Security, we've spent over 20 years working with homeowners associations and property managers to find the system that best fits the pool and HOA needs. Camera systems for the front gate or front entrance, key card systems for the pool gates, or simply updating the gate so that it meets safety and code compliance. We like to take the guesswork out of the process to answer any questions and help find the right solution. Our mission is to help you protect your people and your property, and that includes pools. Contact our team today to schedule your free consultation for your community. I want to get back into the topic at hand because I'm going to go way off the rails here if we continue to chat. Okay,
you can go wherever you want. I don't care. This is fun.
So as a business owner, oftentimes I come into situations where I have two people that are having conflict with each other, or this person aggravates this person, or these people aren't seeing eye to eye, or maybe people don't see eye to eye with me, and there's conflict that happens. We oftentimes then come and sit at a table or stand around the break room or wherever it may be and try to air out our issues. Where are you seeing things? How are you seeing this? Some of the things that we've identified in our business is we use a lot of personality assessments to kind of understand where people are coming from. So, this person kind of sees things this way, so they're naturally going to kind of follow this. This is a trigger for them, right? When you're working with people to resolve a conflict or to bring peace to a situation, like what are the common things? Because I need this in about 30 seconds that you're gonna have to give me this little nugget. But what are some things that you see that are common issues when it comes to trying to bring peace between two parties or three parties? Because there's obviously the conflict, there's the aggravation, the annoyance, whatever it is, big or small. Is there commonalities in those situations?
Yes. To the trained eye, conflict and conflict behavior. To the trained eye, for example, myself, the human repertoire of conflict behaviors is extremely limited. To the untrained eye, it looks like complete chaos and confusion and craziness. But to me, it's totally predictable, totally understandable, and easily diagnosable. And anybody can learn these skills. So the rule, de-escalate and then problem solve. Do not problem solve until you've de-escalated. And the mistake that everybody makes is they go to problem solving first. They try to solve the problem before they've gotten people calmed down. Mm-hmm. And the difficulty with that approach is, the reason that people problem solve first, one, they don't know how to do anything differently. And when you try to problem solve, you try to tell people what to do or try to help people with their problems, you are really soothing your own anxiety over the conflict and the emotions. So early problem solving is very selfish and it's self-soothing. And it doesn't work. So the secret to all of this is learning how to de-escalate somebody, calm them down. And I would say that 90% of the time, if you can calm people down, there's a very specific way to do this that I can talk about. Mm-hmm. If you can calm them down, the problem almost always solves itself. And 10% of the time, it doesn't, and you have to go into more extensive problem solving. But most of the time, The role of the peacemaker is to get people calmed down so they can solve their own problems.
So what I like to do in those situations is I like to come into the room and say, hey, everybody just calm down.
Uh-huh. That works pretty well. Right? That's problem solving. You're telling people what to do. And exactly. So you're telling people to calm down because you're trying to soothe your own anxiety.
Yep.
And it doesn't work. There's only one thing that does work.
All right. What is that?
It's called affect labeling. That's the technical word. And what you're basically going to do is it's a three-step process. So let's just take it through in the right way. In affect labeling, you're going to engage in a three-step process. And this can be used for any kind of upset person, from a two-year-old who's having a tantrum to a 40-year-old acting like a two-year-old.
All right.
And in fact, that 40-year-old is acting like a two-year-old, is a two-year-old in that moment. So step number one is you're going to ignore the words. Doesn't matter what they say. They can be cussing at you, spitting at you, anything. You just ignore the words. The words don't mean anything right now. So it's just white noise.
Mm-hmm.
Step number two is you're going to read the emotional data fields of this upset person. And the beauty of it is our brains are hardwired to do this. All you have to do is just remain quiet, keep your consciousness empty for a second or two, and your brain will process what's going on with the other person. And all of a sudden, you'll start sensing what their emotional experience is.
Mm-hmm.
And then the third step, and this is the part that really bugs people, is you're going to reflect back the emotion with a you statement. So I would say, hey, Chad, man, you're really pissed off. You're really angry. Nobody's supporting you. You're not being listened to. You feel completely disrespected and ignored. And it's making you anxious and worried. And you're a little sad because you feel like you've really been betrayed by the team. And at the end of the day, you feel unloved by everybody. And it just really pisses you off.
And now I'm just calm.
And now you're just calm. It takes about that long.
Mm-hmm. If you can get through them yelling and screaming at you?
You ignore it.
You ignore it.
Yelling and screaming. You just ignore it. It means nothing.
Hmm. So then what do you do?
Well, then you watch and see what happens. And you're looking for four involuntary responses. You're looking for a nod of the head. You're looking for some verbal response like, yeah, or damn right, or exactly, or you know, something like that. Usually pretty exclamatory. You're looking for a dropping of the shoulders. And you're looking for an exhalation, a sigh. These are four involuntary relaxation responses that tell you that the emotional centers of the brain have now been inhibited,
mm-hmm.
and the ventrolateral prefrontal cortex has been activated. And now they're back online and they can think again. And now what you can do is say, so what do we need to do to fix this? Or, you know, what do we do to make things right? Or how do we prevent this from happening again? Open-ended question. And you can engage in a whole bunch of processes, from very non-directive processes, helping people solve their own problems, all the way up to telling people what to do, depending upon what's appropriate in the context and circumstances of the problem. So you can go from just not doing anything to going to a process that we call results-based listening, where you help people solve their problem without giving them any advice,
mm-hmm.
to engaging in interest-based negotiation, where we look for the underlying interests, not the positions, and mm-hmm. try to find ways to satisfy the interests. You know, and if it's really intense, then either you bring in a professional like me, or you know, maybe you have to have a third party make a decision, like an arbitrator, which I do too. Those are pretty extreme. But
sure.
The point is you've got a continuum of directiveness.
It's been interesting to me. Over the last couple of months, I joined a leadership peer group, and they have I'm sure it's pretty normalized in some of these realms, but they have a very systemized way of processing issues. So you bring an issue to the group and say, hey, I need help with solving this problem. And they have a very, very laid out process of how you do that. And it has been a very difficult thing for me to adapt to in the process, because someone brings an issue, natural response is, let me solve it. Let me tell you why this, what's wrong with it, and let me tell you what you need to do to fix it. Right. But part of the process is you cannot solve the problem. You have to ask clarifying questions first. And you can kind of walk through that process.
Okay. I have a comment on that.
Okay.
In the process that I teach, mm-hmm. never, ever, ever ask questions.
Okay.
Because when somebody's emotionally upset, mm-hmm. their prefrontal cortex is offline. Mm-hmm. And they can't answer the question. And all you're going to do is frustrate them and make them even angrier.
Okay.
So you don't have to ask clarifying questions. Now, when you get into problem-solving mode, you can ask questions. But the questions you ask have to be open-ended.
Correct.
And yeah. not on your agenda.
Okay.
So, for example, you might say, so tell me what's going on. And you go, and So and then you summarize, and you'll say something like, "So your problem is X, Y, Z, and what you want to achieve, your outcome is A, B, C." Mm-hmm. You keep going back and forth until you get a yes, and then the next thing you'll say, "Well, what are all the things that you've tried?" And get them to tell you all the things they've tried, and you summarize back that. So your problem is X. You want to get to Y. You tried A, B, and C, and none of them have worked. What are some of the things that you thought about that you haven't tried? And then they list those off. And then you get into a discussion about, okay, well, what makes, as you sit here today, what makes sense for you? And notice how in all of those questions, I never once gave any advice of my own.
Yeah. You're just forcing them to reflect on they already know
and
to
I'm
be true.
I'm acting as a sounding board, and I'm summarizing back, paraphrasing, core messaging, affect, labeling. Mm. them as they go through the process, because most of the time, most people can solve their own problems.
Mm-hmm. As long as you have a clear space to be able to think through them and think logically.
That's right. And that's why we de-escalate first, to create that clear space.
So that's okay. So in a situation where, I guess this is kind of a self-maneuvering thing, where you get yourself so frustrated and annoyed, but you don't actually... You're not bringing it to anybody. You don't have anybody to bring it to. So you're just dealing with it yourself.
Yeah. So the first step is to de-escalate yourself. And you're going to do that by self-affect labeling. I'm really mad. I'm really pissed off. Nobody's listening to me. I feel completely disrespected. I don't feel heard. I'm anxious and worried and nervous, and I'm a little humiliated. I feel betrayed. You can self-affect label and get the same effect. You'll calm yourself down in literally 90 seconds. Then you can do your own problem solving. All right, what am I trying to achieve? What's my problem? Mm-hmm. What are the things that I've tried so far that have worked? What have I thought about but I haven't tried? You know, what information am I missing? Do I need to get more information? Do I need to get more stuff? And, you know, what happens if I'm wrong?
Yeah.
You always ask that question. What if I'm wrong?
Can you copy this key? That's a question we get asked about 3,422 times a year. And how can you actually be sure that the person who asked that question is supposed to get a copy of that key? Well, we think you should always know who can copy your keys to your business and your home, because it could be your neighbor, an old employee, a contractor, or even worse, your mother-in-law. At LockDock Security, we believe in protected key systems, so you always know who has a copy of your key. To find out more, visit LockDock.net or stop by our Charlotte location. LockDock Security, helping you protect your people and your property. I don't mean this to be a leading question, but I am interested in your answer.
Objection.
Why is it important in a situation like this from a problem-solving perspective to be the sounding board and to not give people the solution? Why is it important for them to come up with the answers on their own?
There are a number of reasons. First of all, you don't want to own the problem. Mm-hmm. The moment you start giving your own advice, you now own the problem. And if things go wrong, and they will, guess who gets the blame? Mm-hmm. Second, as a matter of moral imperative, people have to learn to take responsibility for their own problems. Mm-hmm. That's a point of moral maturity. So to the degree that you take away the growth opportunity from somebody by solving their problem for them, you're denying them a maturation moment. Third, most people don't want your advice. They could care less. Mm-hmm. And fourth, typically when you are speaking from your point of view, you've got an agenda that may not align with the speaker's agenda, the other person's agenda. And so you're doomed to failure.
Hmm. So the value is just being a good listener and a good sounding board.
That's right.
Hmm.
And more often, that will solve the problem almost all the 98% of the time.
So
there are times when there are technical problems that somebody's facing, and maybe they don't realize they have a technical problem, and you've got technical expertise, and you can say, well, your problem is a technical problem, and here's the way I approach it. I said, well, you know, I've seen people with this problem before. Would you be interested in knowing how the other people with the same situation have solved their problem? Notice that I'm not giving advice. I am, but I'm not. And so sometimes there's just technical information that people need.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're using the wrong kind of glue, or you know, you're using the wrong pick to get that lock open, or whatever.
Sure. Or you're using the wrong auto rotation,
exactly.
Landing situation.
Yeah, exactly.
So you're teaching folks this these problem solving skills so that they can apply them in their own business and their own life.
Correct.
But obviously, there's going to be times when it gets so, and maybe you're the one, the two people are the ones that are in conflict, and they just can't seem to get through the emotional side of things. And you were talking earlier about the kind of the understanding of listening people into existence and understanding the emotions of everyone. How do we become more aware of those types of things, or maybe even more so? Let me be specific in my question. When you say listen each other into existence, what do you mean by that?
So every person has a deep need to be heard at a very deep emotional level, and that's a need that has never been satisfied before, because we certainly were not heard as children.
Mm-hmm.
And we get out into the real world, and you know, in conversation, we're never heard, because conversations are never about listening; they're always about me,
mm-hmm.
right? And what I've learned is that when you listen to people very deeply, using core messaging and affect labeling, they feel deeply, deeply validated. And I came around to this idea of listening others into existence when I was working with some middle school teachers, teaching them some of these skills so they could have better classroom control and validate and calm their kids. And I'd had these teachers in what we call a listening peace circle that I've created. And in the circle, in order for you to speak, you have to validate the person who spoke before you by mm-hmm. deeply listening to them at an emotional level. And when we were down that circle, the administrator who was in charge of this program, who had participated in the circle, had tears in her eyes. And she was in her late 30s and said, that's the first time I've ever been listened to before in my life. I've always been ignored and disrespected and completely invisible. And this is the first time I really felt listened into existence.
Hmm.
And that's when the light bulb went on. I said, oh, exactly. And then I started thinking about all the interactions I've had with people, all the teaching and training I've done over the years. And that's exactly the experience that people were having. They were listening other people into existence. We saw it a lot. We've seen it a lot in the prison project, and you know, where we've taught incarcerated people, primarily lifers and long-termers, how to be peacemakers. And they tell us story after story after story of how they've listened others into existence and gotten tremendous transformative results out of that.
And that's the process. When you say listening to others into existence, is just listening and validating what they're saying?
At an emotional level.
So give me an example of this.
Well, let me tell you a story.
Okay.
I can probably illustrate it best by story. So this is probably the first story that came out of the Prison of Peace Project. Laurel and I were working at Valley State Prison for Women in California, which at that time was the largest, most violent women's prison in the world, training a cohort of 15 women. In week 5, we went into the room where we were doing the training, and one of our students, Sarah, had come early, and she was sitting in the corner quietly sobbing. And this was unusual. So we walked over, and Laurel knelt next to her and said, Sarah, what's going on? Open-ended question.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, and she never told us this before, but she said, well, I've been in prison for 18 years. I am in prison because I killed a family of 4 as a drunk driver. And out of that accident, there was not a scratch on me. And I was sentenced to 25 years to life. I had to give up my 3-year-old son to my sister to raise. And I've written him every week for the last 18 years and never heard back from him. And he won't talk to me on the phone. And the only way I know how he's doing is by my phone calls with my sister. Earlier this week, I decided to write him a letter along the lines of what you both have been teaching us about how to listen to emotions. And I imagined all the emotions he must have been feeling over all these years. He's 21 now. Mm-hmm. About his mother who completely abandoned him and was never there for him and is now serving a life sentence in prison. Today, I got a letter from him. First letter I received in 18 years. And he was very angry, which of course he had the right to be. But at the end of the letter, he said, "Mom, I love you. I'm bringing my girlfriend and we'll come visit you in 3 weeks." And then she started crying again. And I was thunderstruck, because right there was the evidence that what we were teaching was so powerful. And all she did to end the estrangement between her and her 21-year-old son was to listen to his emotions, not make it about herself, not talk about herself, but just take the time to reflect how he must have experienced life without her for 21 years. And that's all he needed from her. He just needed to be heard at a deep level.
I think that's something in everyone's life that we all have huge space to do better is whenever we interact with people, and you know, because life is so busy and we have to hurry and hurry and hurry because we got to get home and watch television, that we don't take the time to listen to people. And so somebody says something and it's react quickly and not actually understanding what the, I guess, what the, where the context is coming from or what the emotions are behind it. And that's it's very eye-opening, especially through that story, is I'm trying to put myself in those positions where having conversations with people, either in our organization, maybe it's a customer, maybe it's family, that you're constantly, or I'm constantly trying to drive the, whatever the agenda is in my mind, the thing that needs to be done, versus understanding where that person is, what emotions they're processing and why it matters to them. And
that's right.
I think that's probably a big thing that anybody that's listening to this right now, that's an area of improvement that they can actively work on today.
Here's the beauty of all this, Chad, is that it costs nothing to do this.
Yeah.
It costs you nothing. And you can spread peace and love and validation in the world around you, make little ripples in the pond of peace, with no effort, no cost, nothing. All you have to do is learn how to do it. Mm-hmm. And I had a group coaching session during the pandemic. I was working with a group of people. And I said, all right, what you're going to do this week is you're going to go out where you live and you're going to walk around the block or walk around up and down the street where you live. And whenever you see a neighbor, especially a neighbor you don't know, you're going to maintain social distance. You're going to say, "Hey, hi, how you doing? I'm Doug. I live down the street. How you doing in the pandemic?" And then you're going to just reflect back their emotions until you get the 4 unconscious notes. And they did that, and they said it was the most amazing experience they could possibly imagine.
Yeah.
People were so grateful that a neighbor stranger took the time to deeply listen to them in this time of stress.
Yeah.
And that's all we have to do.
Yeah.
You end fights and arguments forever. You really do.
I don't know. I'm processing this as, I think the natural thing is for people that people want to be heard and listened to. And I believe that people want to listen and connect, you know, so on both sides of a situation, people want to connect, like it's part of a community. But I think that there's lack of education in actually how to get there, because
we're
also so busy that you're in that passing mode. You're walking down your neighborhood, and you say, "Hey, how are you doing?" And they say, "Fine," and we keep on going. And that's the interaction. Changing that to, "How are you doing with this?" Or, what are you dealing with today? Or what is important to you today? Like trying to figure out how to get more of a level of engagement to get a better understanding of those where they're at emotionally is, again, it's dedicating the time for it.
Well, it is, but you're stumbling into a huge insight that that I made many years ago. And that is that why is it that we don't do this? Well, there's a very profound reason why we don't do this. And that is that we've been lied to for 4,000 years. We have literally been lied to by philosophers and theologians. We've been told that what makes human beings different from other species of animals is rationality. Mm. That is a complete lie. There is no science to support it. And it has caused more abuse, more mental illness, more violence than any other single thought that humans have come up with over the last 4,000 years. The truth of the matter is we are 98% emotional and only 2% rational.
Mm.
We can't make a decision without being emotional first.
Mm-hmm.
Every decision we make is an emotional decision. Now, we can justify it and explain it away using rational critical thinking and rational processes, but the decision itself is an emotional decision. And once you get that insight, then you begin to realize why it is that we don't listen to emotions, because we've been programmed from birth to look at emotions as weak,
mm-hmm.
as making you vulnerable, as being irrational, as being bad, not making you tough. It's all bullshit. And it's extremely abusive. And once you overcome that and start seeing your fellow humans as emotional creatures, everything changes. Everything changes. The judgment goes away. The criticism goes away. And you begin to see people with compassion, emotions. And you start looking at people from the lens of emotion. Oh, this person's experiencing loneliness, anger, and frustration. And now you can work with that. You know, political polarization. It's all about emotion.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a class of leaders that believe that they're going to protect their power position and privilege by exploiting people's fears. And they're quite good at it. But once you start seeing the emotional manipulation, it becomes clear what they're doing and disgusting. But the antidote is to listen to emotions. And that's the trick.
It's definitely an area that we all have a lot of growth that we can work in. And it's something that I do believe that as if you're in any type of leadership position, it is something that we have to get better at, because
you can't be a leader without listening to your people's emotions. What are the important things that you want as a leader? You want to motivate people. You want people to be in integrity. You want them to have high productivity. You want them to be essentially happy and content doing what they're doing. Hopefully you want them to be curious.
Mm-hmm.
You want them to have the right balance between entrepreneurism and being a team player.
Mm-hmm.
Guess what? Every single one of those attributes is emotional.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can't master your emotions as a leader and be emotionally competent and understand how to read the emotions of your team and reflect back those emotions, you don't have a chance.
Mm.
And the thing is, this is not taught in business school. And the reason it's not taught in business schools is because business professors don't get their jobs. They don't get tenure based on emotion. They get their tenure based on papers based on quantitative analysis. And so they all go to the rational side, which is not where we should be. Not for leaders. Leaders have to be on the emotional side.
Mm-hmm.
And that doesn't mean being weak. It means being smart. Look, if we're 98% emotional and only 2% rational, and yet our whole society is based on rationality, we're leaving 98% of who we are as human beings off the table. And if you want to be an effective leader that everyone wants to follow, if you can bring that other 98% of your people to the table, think about how powerful your team's going to be.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Doug, I want to be mindful of our time together, because I know that I've kept you here for quite some time. But
I can talk about this forever, obviously.
it's been hugely insightful, and I hope that those that are watching and are listening are going, okay, wow, this is eye-opening. This is massive. So the question is going to be, if they want to get more about this or maybe attend one of your workshops or connect in with you or read one of your books that you've written, what's the best way for them to connect with you?
Well, my email address is really easy. It's Doug, D-O-U-G, at DougNoll.com, DougNoll.com. I created a webpage on my website for your audience. And the website, the webpage is DougNoll, DougNoll.co, not com, co, slash coffee break with a hyphen.
Awesome.
Coffee break.
There you go. So there you can go check that out and stay connected and learn more about this, because this is my mind is kind of processing 1,000 things right now, but this is this is very impactful for I think for me personally, but just overall for any organization that were to implement these tactics. Doug, thanks again, man. It was such a blast to chat with you today. Makes me want to go get my helicopter's license and throw my television out the window. Thank you for joining us today. Make sure you subscribe on something that's not a television, and make sure you connect with us, because we want to learn and grow together. We've got a brand new episode every Tuesday morning at 9 a.m., and I'm excited to share them with you. So make sure you're subscribed so you don't miss a single one. We'll see you next time right here on the Coffee Break Podcast.